The following program is produced by the Living Church of God.
Did you know that the Bible contains a theme running all the way from Genesis to Revelation about two cities? These cities have histories that intersect at various points along the line. What are these cities? How will their future affect your future? Well, stay tuned.
Tomorrow's World. The Living Church of God presents Dr. Roderick C. Meredith, Richard Ames, bringing you the good news of your future in tomorrow's world. This week, guest presenter John O'Gwen discusses a biblical tale of two cities. And now, John O'Gwen.
Well, greetings, friends. The book of Genesis, the first book in your Bible, is the book of beginnings. It's the story of origins. It tells the story of the very origin of the universe. In fact, in Genesis 1:1, we're told that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So we have the origin of the universe. The Bible goes on to explain right here in the first chapter of Genesis, the origin of life. Coming on through Genesis, we read of the origin of human civilization. We read of the origin of nations. So the book of Genesis is a book of beginnings. It's a book of origins. It tells the beginning of the story. Now, the book of Revelation, on the other hand, represents an unveiling of the future. And in so many ways, the book of Revelation corresponds to the book of Genesis. There is a story that begins in the book of Genesis, and it comes together and is resolved with all the threads coming together in the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation, this book of unveiling, was written to show God's servants the things that would come to pass in the future. Now, in the book of Genesis, we're introduced to two cities. And in the book of Revelation, we learn what the future holds for those cities. The first of these cities at which we're going to look, we find mentioned here in the book of Genesis chapter 10. Genesis 10 tells the story right after the flood, when Noah and his family had survived the flood that God sent upon the earth, and we're told the beginning of human civilization after that time. And we're told here in Genesis chapter 10 in verse 8 that one of Noah's grandsons, a man by the name of Cush, had a son named Nimrod. And Nimrod, we're told in Genesis 10:8, began to be a mighty one upon the earth. The Hebrew word here is gibor. It means a tyrant or a despot. Nimrod began to be a tyrant. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord, wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. And it goes on to enumerate other cities. The city of Babel, better known as Babylon. That was the beginning of Nimrod's kingdom. In Genesis chapter 11, we're told a little bit about that city that Nimrod built. The whole earth was of one language and one speech, we're told in Genesis 11:1. And we're also told that Nimrod gathered the people and they began to build this city and they began to build a tower. And the tower, or the city, rather, was called Babel. That's mentioned in Genesis 11 and verse 9. God intervened to cut short the beginning of this civilization, the beginning of this city that was being built by Nimrod and the civilization that it represented. That's the beginning of what the Bible calls Babylon. The city of Babel, or Babylon, was built in the plains of Shinar, as we're told in Genesis 11 and verse 2. And we're told in Genesis 14:1 that it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, the king of Shinar. Now, we've just seen that Shinar is the location, is the plain where Babel was built. Genesis 14 opens with an invasion from Babylon. We're introduced here to this invasion and this coming from the east down into what is the present-day area of Jordan and Israel. And we find this invasion and a looting of cities by King Amraphel and those that were allied with his Babylonian kingdom. And in response to this, Abraham, who was had his nephew Lot taken captive, Abraham got together his servants and he chased after these kings and he caught up with them and he retook all of the things that they had looted. And so Genesis 14 then tells us that as Abraham returned from this battle, that he came here to the area of Salem, the city of Melchizedek. Salem was the ancient name of Jerusalem. In Genesis chapter 14 and verse 18, we're told that Melchizedek was the king of Salem, and he came forth to Abraham with bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him. Melchizedek blessed Abram or Abraham. Now, who was this Melchizedek? And how is it that he blessed Abraham? Because remember, Abraham was the one to whom God had made all of these promises. Well, we're told in Hebrews chapter 7, as the Apostle Paul writes concerning this, and he explains who Melchizedek was. We see here two cities, Babel or Babylon, and on the other hand, Salem or Jerusalem. One was the city that Nimrod built, the other is the city of Melchizedek. Who is this Melchizedek? Notice Hebrews 7:1. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom Abraham gave a tenth part of all. Abraham tithed to Melchizedek, first being, by interpretation, king of righteousness. That's what Melchizedek means. And after that also, king of Salem, which is king of peace. Without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abides a priest continually. Now, Melchizedek clearly is no ordinary human being. He is without father, without mother, without beginning of days or end of life. He's made like unto the Son of God. So the one that appeared to Abraham with the title Melchizedek, king of righteousness, the one who was viewed as king of Salem, that was the one that certainly became Jesus Christ. He abides a priest continually. And Jesus Christ, we're told in Hebrews 7:17, is a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. We're introduced now, by the time we get to the early part of Genesis, Genesis 14, we're introduced to two cities, the city of Nimrod and the city of Melchizedek. Centuries pass after the events recorded in Genesis 14 before either of these cities comes back to prominence in the biblical account. Over time, Abraham had a son whose name was Isaac. Isaac, in turn, had a son named Jacob to whom the birthright blessings were passed. Jacob had 12 sons. Eventually, Jacob and his family went down to Egypt, and over a period of several centuries, Jacob's family grew to a great nation, the nation of Israel. God raised up Moses to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt and into the land that had been anciently promised to Abraham. Under Joshua, the people entered into the land and conquered it. There was a period of time when Israel was ruled by the judges, and then finally, there was a king that was raised up in Israel. The first king of Israel was King Saul. He disqualified himself by his conduct and was replaced by a man that God chose and called a man after his own heart, David. Now, when David took over the kingdom, he initially reigned for the first 7 years in a city in Judah, the city of Hebron. But then David wanted to unite the entire 12 tribes, and he wanted a new capital. 1 Chronicles 11:4. David and all Israel went up to Jerusalem, called Jebus at that time, because the Jebusites were occupying it. And David took the castle of Zion, the city of David, Jerusalem, and his kingdom expanded, and it was under the reign of his son, King Solomon, that Jerusalem reached its glory with this great temple that was built. a magnificent temple for which David prepared. You remember, he wanted to build the temple, but God said, no, I'm not going to allow you to do that, but your son can do it. So David prepared, and this tremendous building, one of the most beautiful and magnificent buildings of ancient times, was built. Now, what about Babylon? Well, several centuries more go by after the time of David, about 1000 B.C. We come almost four centuries. And about 612, the city of Nineveh, which was the capital of the Assyrian Empire, fell. And Babylon was the one that led a confederation of armies against Nineveh and conquered the Assyrian Empire. So Babylon now comes on the scene as a major world power. This was under King Nebuchadnezzar. He initially was a general in his father's army and took part in the siege of Nineveh. And then here we are about 12 centuries from the time of Abraham and the history of these two cities, Babylon and Jerusalem, began to converge. Their history begins to come together once again as Nebuchadnezzar takes his armies and moves down into the area of modern-day Israel to come against and to conquer Jerusalem, to conquer the state of Judah, as it was at that time, of which Jerusalem was the capital. Now, before we look further at these two cities and what their future means to you personally, I want to offer you a free booklet that will help you make sense of this vital subject. This booklet, The Beast of Revelation, will enable you to make sense of Bible prophecy. It will tell the story of these two cities and what the future holds for them and for you. In addition, my friends, I would like to offer you a free subscription to Tomorrow's World magazine. It's a full-color magazine loaded with articles not only on world affairs and Bible prophecy, but also on life itself. So pick up the phone and call our toll-free number, or you can go to the website if you prefer and order directly from our website at www.tomorrowsworld.org.
This informative booklet is yours absolutely free. No cost, no obligation, if you call this toll-free number, 1-800-934-5579. That's 1-800-934-5579. Or send your request to Tomorrow's World, P.O. Box 3800, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227. With this offer, you will also receive your free subscription to Tomorrow's World magazine, full of timely articles and unique insights on today's important issues. Tomorrow's World magazine keeps you up to date with world trends, Bible prophecy, and the very meaning of life itself. Tomorrow's World magazine. Call today.
The beginning of the 7th century saw Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, invade the Jewish state and conquer Jerusalem. This is recorded in Daniel chapter 1, among other places, because Daniel himself was one of the captives that Nebuchadnezzar took to Babylon. Daniel was a young teenager, perhaps 15 or 16 at the time this happened. We're told in Daniel 1:1 that in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came unto Jerusalem and besieged it. Nebuchadnezzar came back several years later. In fact, about 12 years later, he came back, and then he came back once again, came back finally in 586 for his third invasion and destroyed Jerusalem. He burned the temple, he took the remaining people into captivity, and Jerusalem was destroyed. So much of that whole area of the Middle East, the cities were destroyed, people were deported, populations were removed. Now, what of Babylon? Seemingly, Jerusalem was gone from the scene, and Babylon was supreme at the head of a great empire that ruled the whole Middle Eastern area, starting at the Mediterranean, coming all the way across through the Tigris-Euphrates Valley and on to the east beyond, coming all the way down to Egypt. Well, you know, after Daniel was in Babylon, and he was by this time an older teenager, maybe 18 or 19, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And in this dream, Nebuchadnezzar saw a great image. Well, Nebuchadnezzar had the dream, and he called all of his wise men in, and he wanted them to tell him what the dream meant. They said, "Well, King, tell us what you dreamed, and we'll explain what it meant." And Nebuchadnezzar said, "Oh, no, you don't. If you can tell me what it means, you ought to be able to tell me what I dreamed." Well, of course, they couldn't do that. Finally, Daniel was brought before Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel had prayed and sought God, and Daniel came before Nebuchadnezzar, and he said, "You, O king, you're a great king, a king of kings. You rule over many empires. And what you saw was a great image standing on this plain. And it had a head of gold, it had shoulders of silver, it had thighs of brass and legs of iron. And it had feet with 10 toes, and these feet were a combination of iron and ceramic clay." Then he went on to tell King Nebuchadnezzar what this dream meant. He explained to the king that he was not telling him simply because of what he himself knew, but rather that the God of heaven was the revealer of this knowledge. In Daniel 2:22, Daniel said that it is God that reveals the deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. So Daniel then explains, verse 28, that there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Do you realize, my friends, that way back centuries ago, over 25 centuries ago, the future was foretold, reaching from that day all the way down to the time ahead of us, the time immediately in front of us. Daniel explained to King Nebuchadnezzar, he said, "You, O king, are that head of gold." This is the interpretation. You are that head of gold. He went on to explain that after you shall arise another kingdom, inferior in certain ways. That is represented by the silver. And then there will arise a third kingdom. That's described by the brass. Then finally, the fourth kingdom, verse 40, shall be strong as iron. So the iron legs represented the fourth kingdom, the continuation of ancient Babylon. And that comes all the way down to the end time, symbolized by the 2 feet that are a mixture of iron and clay, the final successor to the Babylonian system. That future resurrection of a what the Bible calls Babylon the Great, symbolized by this mixture. And we're told that the last thing Daniel described was a great stone coming out of heaven, cut without hands, a stone of supernatural origin that came down, smashed the image on its toes, the whole thing turned to dust and blew away. The stone, on the other hand, became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Daniel explained that this meant that the God of heaven would set up a kingdom that would never be removed. So Daniel explained to King Nebuchadnezzar at the height of the Babylonian Empire that Babylon, as it was at that time, Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, was not going to stand forever. Oh no, there was going to arise another kingdom. Well, Daniel chapter 5 tells the story of Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, Belshazzar, a great party he was having as Babylon was besieged by the Medes and the Persians. Belshazzar thought he was invincible. Daniel was called in that night because, you see, Belshazzar saw something. He saw something that scared him to within an inch of his life. He saw something that was incredible. He saw a hand mysteriously appear out of nowhere and begin writing on the wall. Daniel was brought in to tell King Belshazzar what that meant. Daniel explained to him, he said, "This night your kingdom is going to fall to the Medes and the Persians." And that's exactly what happened. Cyrus the Great, his armies entered into Babylon, and Babylon fell that very night. Belshazzar was executed, and Cyrus, king of Persia, now ruled over Babylon. He was that second king, that second kingdom. Now, what happened when Cyrus took the throne? Well, Ezra chapter 1 explains, because once again, the history of Babylon and Jerusalem began to intersect. Jerusalem had been destroyed by Babylon. the people taken into captivity. But now we're told in Ezra chapter 1, or Ezra 1:1, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, and he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom. He put it in writing. He said, "Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the eternal God of heaven has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he's charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? His God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Lord God of Israel." Zechariah chapter 1 describes a vision that Zechariah saw. Verse 12, "In his vision he saw the angel of the Lord answer and say, 'O Lord of hosts, how long will you not have mercy on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah against which you've had indignation these 70 years?'" The city of Babylon dwindled over the centuries, and it eventually withered and simply became desolate. By the first century B.C., much of the Chaldean population had actually been brought to Rome as slaves. The Chaldeans were the people of the area of Babylon. And so by the first century B.C., many of these people had been deported to Rome and were slaves there because the Roman Empire ruled over that whole area. Jerusalem, in the meantime, had continued on down, and the city of Jerusalem had continued to thrive. The temple that had been built by Zerubbabel was the temple, the second temple, the temple to which Jesus came. And that is the city and the temple of which you read in the New Testament. Now, what about our day and the time ahead? What does the future hold? Zechariah 12 gives a story that comes on down to our day. Because Jerusalem, of course, was destroyed again. It was destroyed in 70 AD by the Romans. The temple was destroyed. But Zechariah, in Zechariah 12, saw a time in the future, recorded in Zechariah 12:2. "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege, both against Judah and against Jerusalem." The Jews did not inhabit and rule Jerusalem for centuries. For absolutely century after century, from the time the Romans destroyed it in 70 AD, and yet here was Zechariah describing a time at the end when Jerusalem would be like a bubbling, boiling cauldron. Jerusalem, God said in Zechariah 12:3, will be a burdensome stone for all people. Describes all people being gathered together against it. Now, what of Babylon? Well, while the ancient city was destroyed, God inspired his prophets to record an end-time Babylon. Isaiah chapter 47 and verse 1 refers to the daughter of Babylon. It refers to, "O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall be no more called tender and delicate." The Bible describes, and Isaiah and Jeremiah both use the term, the daughter of Babylon. This end-time Babylon. Now, the Bible in Revelation chapter 17, John was shown in vision, actually a great beast, and he saw a woman riding it, that it had 7 heads and 10 horns, and she had a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great. And he saw this system described, this end-time system. What's that end-time system mean? What does it mean to you, my friends? Well, I would like to invite you to write for our free booklet, The Beast of Revelation. It'll go further into a tale of these two cities, past and future. You need this booklet to be able to understand Bible prophecy, to be able to understand your future, my friends. So I'd like to invite you to call or write right now for this free booklet.
This informative booklet is yours absolutely free. No cost, no obligation. If you call this toll-free number, 1-800-934-5579. That's 1-800-934-5579. Or send your request to Tomorrow's World, P.O. Box 3800, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227. With this offer, you will also receive your free subscription to Tomorrow's World magazine, full of timely articles and unique insights on today's important issues. Tomorrow's World magazine keeps you up to date with world trends, Bible prophecy, and the very meaning of life itself. Tomorrow's World Magazine. Call today.
What is ahead for this system that the Bible labels Babylon the Great? Revelation 17 describes it, and in Revelation 18 we read the statement, Revelation 18:1, "After these things," John writes, "I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen. Babylon, the city that Nimrod built, will be destroyed. It will ultimately become what is described here as the habitation of demons and the hold of every foul spirit, the cage of every unclean and hateful bird." Now, what about Jerusalem? Jerusalem, the very name means the city of peace. And yet, Jerusalem is a city that has known so little peace. Zechariah describes in chapter 14 of a future time when nations will gather against Jerusalem to battle. But we're told, Zechariah 14:3, "Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. And his feet shall stand in that day on the Mount of Olives that is before Jerusalem on the east." The mount will cleave in two. And what's going to happen? Jesus Christ is going to set up his kingdom. Verse 9, "The Lord shall be king over all the earth. And in that day there will be one Lord and his name one." He's going to rule and reign for 1,000 years. Revelation 20 describes that. John says, "I saw thrones and they that sat on them, and judgment was given to them." Going to rule and reign for 1,000 years. And what's going to happen at the end of that 1,000 years? Revelation 21 describes a new heavens and a new earth. And John saw, Revelation 21:2, the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven. The New Jerusalem. Babylon, the city and the system that originated with Nimrod, is going to perish forever, while Jerusalem will be created anew to descend from heaven as the city of God forever. My friends, we invite you to tune in each and every week as Dr. Meredith and Richard Ames continue to explain the end-time prophecies of your Bible and the good news of tomorrow's world, as well as the entire way of life contained in God's Word. Be sure to join us next week, right here at this same time and same channel.
This informative booklet is yours absolutely free. No cost, no obligation. If you call this toll-free number, 1-800-934-5579. That's 1-800-934-5579. Or send your request to Tomorrow's World, P.O. Box 3800, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227. We invite you to visit our webpage at tomorrowsworld.org. The preceding program is produced by the Living Church of God.